come see me after class, okay? All of you. Okay?
I think you can pull my own after class.
Come see me after class, okay? Okay. Okay, last time we did the definition of property. Remember, you have real property. That's property that's part of land or attached to land. You have personal property, like this chair that can move around. And then you have intellectual property. That's property in ideas, property in methods. It's intellectual. We talked about how property rights are a part of our Constitution. They're part inherent in our law. And lastly, we did the most important thing in this class, the four postulates. You need to know the four postulates. You want to be well in the class, four postulates, you just need to know four things, you're three-quarters of the way there. Number one, property is a collection of rights, not a collection of things. Number two, the property and the law are intertwined. They grew up together. If they were in Arkansas, they'd be first cousins. Okay? You get married. Third thing, property rights are inherent to our humanity. Under our Constitution, they come from God. Okay? That's not a liturgical concept, it's a legal one. And it was because our founders said, if they come from God, you can't take them away. They're yours forever. You're born, you have property rights. And lastly, your property rights are summarized by the term equal. What can you do with property? Exclude, possess, use, and transfer. Those are the four items within the four postulates that show you what you can do with your property rights. Tonight, we're going to delve into personal property. We're going to talk about how you acquire personal property, and we're going to do the most famous property case. It's called Pearson versus Post. It's about a fox. Property law is obsessed with wild animals. Why do you think? Do you have any guess? Why do you think property laws are in love with wild animals? Nobody owns them. So if you take a wild animal and make it your own and capture it, guess what? You're the original owner. Now, everything else that you get as property probably came from somebody else. Because even if you made it, the item of which you made it from may have come from someplace else. So it has antecedents with other owners. With a wild animal, that's not true. One of the reasons why property law loves wild animals is because nobody owned it beforehand. They're untouched. So they can do all kinds of goofy things to move them around and say, guess what? That's how you own it. That's how you acquire it. That's how you lose ownership of it. Now, we talk in terms of title. Ownership, as we said, did not even come into the law until the 1600s. When we talk about property rights, we don't really talk about ownership. Ownership is only a matter of proof. It says that you proof. That's what it's all about. It says that, guess what? You can prove you have those rights. But it's all about the rights. And the proof is only the method by which you get those rights. We're going to talk about that. Okay. Remember the four postulates. Remember the last one, exclude, possess, use, and transfer. Remember that real property is property that is attached to land or the land itself. Personal is movable. Intellectual is patents, trademarks, and copyrights. Now, under the law, most property law, as we stated in the first lecture, is state law. Why? Because it's common law. It comes down from England. Property law is the oldest law out there. Why? Because we all care about property. Okay, other than the criminal codes, which get amended as social mores change, okay, property law is pretty stagnant. Hasn't changed an awful lot in the hundreds of years from when it went from Rome to England. So property law is pretty old, and as a result, it rests in the state law because it comes out of common law. And that's where common law resides, is in the state law. Now, we also have statutes, and two of the statutes define what the law is. Real property and personal property are defined in the law. The estate powers and trust law, which is a section of law relating to how you can give your property pretty much after you die, says that real property is land or any estate land, including leaseholds. That's an important concept. A leasehold is renting it. At common law, that means back in England a long time ago, a leasehold was not viewed as real property. Why was that? Because you had to be a property owner in order to fold. If they gave it to tenants as property owners, in a slice of time that we do today, they'd have to grant them the right to vote. They didn't want to do that. So as a result of that, in old England and early in the United States, a leasehold or a tenancy was viewed as personal property. Today, that's not the case. And it hasn't been for a couple hundred years. In the United States today, and specifically in New York, a leasehold interest, together like any other right in a land, is real property. Okay? Mortgages. You take a mortgage, that's actually a real property interest. Why? Because it's attached to the land, legally. Okay? Personal property is all other physical, tangible property. This table, the pen you have, your computer, your car, your puppy, all that stuff is personal property. And that's defined as any other property, okay, other than real property. Creative guys, those statute writers, that would be one of them, isn't that? The sad state of society. But at the end of the day, those property terms come in real property and personal property. Real property is anything with land, personal property is everything else. Now, why is intellectual property not in there? It's the one exception, and it's the one major exception, to state law. Intellectual property is all federal law. There's three federal statutes relating to patents, copyrights, and trademarks. And the reason the federal government controls intellectual property law is because it's in the Constitution. The Constitution gives the federal government the right to control intellectual property. They don't give them the power of all the other common law. Okay? Now you can convert, as we said the last time, real property to personal property. And vice versa. If I build a house, it was a bunch of wood and other things that I put on the land. When it was at Home Depot, it was personal property. Once I affix it to the land, I put the foundation in and then I put up the wood, the shutters, the siding, then it becomes real property. Similarly, if I detach it, it becomes personal property again. So if I'm in the backyard and I decide I want to make my own bricks, because I didn't want to, if I dug them up and
put them in an oven, guess what? That real property, because the dirt is real property, got to dig up and then make into a brick. It's now personal property. Okay? So you can convert it back and forth.
As long as it's immovable and attached to land, it's real property. When you detach it, it is personal. Attaching it makes it what we call a fixture. Okay? Okay. Now, what about vegetation? Trees, plants. Two terms. Latin is fun. It's all throughout the law. I'm not a good Latin scholar. I think both my daughters take it in high school. They did much better on their SAT. But I never took it. I took it through law school. But this is Latin terms. Fructus naturalis, fructus industrialis. It can tell you basically industrial or natural. In naturalis is any vegetation that's put there by God. Okay? Your grass, your trees, anything you don't plant that's there. That is considered real property. If, however, I cultivate it, like I pick the apple off the tree, guess what? When it's on a tree, it's technically real property. As I pick it off, if I can harvest it, it becomes personal property. So fructus naturalis, real property. Fructus industrialis, personal property. That's on the test. Write it down. Okay. Permanently attached, it's a fixture. Detach it, it goes back to personal property. Okay. Now, these are the ways you can take title to the property. Yes.
Proof base, that's why you have these wonderful things, because everything on here is on test. Okay? Proof base, industrialis is personal property, it's on the second page. Okay? Proof base naturalis is real property. If God put it there, then it is real property. If you put it there and can remove it, then it is personal property. Okay.
These eight ways are the methodologies by which you can take title, basically prove that you have your property rights. And what is the first postulate?
What's the first postulate? Great idea. Property is a collection of rights.
You can prove that you have all those rights and can exercise all these put there by one of these methodologies. One, possession. Two, sale. I buy it. Okay? Possession is basically I have it. It's mine. Adverse possession is basically I legally take it from you. I basically, it's legally stealing. It's all about a statute of limitations. When we come to real property, we'll get into it at length. Accession, confusion, judgment is when a court tells you that you own it. If I got a court judgment that says I own it, I can wave that judgment around saying I own it. That's the case where my cow wanders into your property. I go to court and the judge says, it is Bob's cow, he gets to take it back. I can wave to all my friends and neighbors, the judge says it's my cow, and that way I get it. Okay? What happens when the property is lost or abandoned, okay, or mislaid? That way the finder could end up with the property. And lastly is gift. We're going to go through each one of these. But remember, all of these means by which you are declared an owner, it's just about the proof. These are the methods by which you prove that you have all those property rights. It's not the proof
that allows you to roommate. It's those rights. Those rights in the property are what allow you to do everything you want with the property.
Okay? So all these methods are just a factor of proof. Okay. There's an old expression.
You go to grandma and say, I've heard property, one of the key things is possession is 9/10 of the law. The reason people say that is if you have an item, if you exercise dominion and control over it, you basically are exercising those property rights, right? In order to exercise your property rights, you have to control them. If you have that item, if you take my car, and am I able to drive it? Am I able to exclude others from having it? Yes, no, no. Okay. You have the car. Yes. Am I able to sell it to you? Well, maybe, but I don't have it, and you're not paying much if I don't deliver the car. Okay? So, at the end of the day, possession is critical because in order to exercise your rights, you have to have the item. So, possession, and if you have the item, most people aren't going to claim that it's not yours. Why? I got it. It's mine. So, possession is a critical thing. It's also called, in the law, occupancy. You'll rarely see that. Most people call it today possession. But it's the number one thing about taking control of those rights. Now, this is where wild animals come in. Because how do you get a wild animal? How do you make it yours? How do you take title to it? You have to possess it. That means you have to capture it. If you take a wild animal and make it yours, I take that Bengal tiger who's running around in my backyard and put a leash on it. I would never be so rich. But if you take a wild animal and you capture it, guess what? That means it's yours. Because nobody else has possession to it. Okay? When you shoot a deer on hunting season, and you take it back to feed your family or whatever you're going to do with family after it's assumed room temperature, that becomes yours. Why? You captured it. The law doesn't say you got to capture it a lot. It says you just have to take it. Okay?
Mere pursuit is not possession.
That's what our case is about tonight. If I merely chase after the deer and run around my backyard with it, it's not mine. I have to make it mine by putting a fence around my yard, or putting it in the cage, or putting a leash around it. I have to take possession of the animal.
Mere pursuit is not possession. Violation of statute. If I shoot that deer and it's not hunting season,
I don't get to keep the deer. Why? Because the state says you can only capture that deer a certain time. Okay? And that's a violation of law.
Society said, guess what? That's a limitation on your property rights, and you can't do it. At common law, there were certain deer that the king said were his deer, or queen, her deer. And as a result of that, you couldn't take them. So you can only make these wild animals yours if it is allowed. Now, once you capture that animal, it's yours. You can do what you want with it. But if it escapes, it's no longer yours. If it goes back to the wild, it's no longer yours. There's actually a famous case. Today it is illegal for most people to own a porpoise, a dolphin. There was a show on when I was a little boy called Flipper. Anybody ever hear of it? About a porpoise. Little boy used to play with it and come off his dock and throw a fish and talk to him. Well, he viewed Flipper as his dolphin. It was his pet. Okay? Today it's illegal by federal law to own a dolphin unless you have a special permit. But assuming that you can, assuming you get that permit, if that dolphin goes back out to the ocean, is that your dolphin? Only if it exhibits a habit of return. You shout out into the middle of the sea, Flipper, come home, and he swims back to you. There was a nature bird called a passenger pigeon, a carrier pigeon, that used to be able to fly away and come back and exhibit a habit of return. Even though you didn't capture that, even though you didn't have it in your possession, you let it fly away, the law said if it exhibits a habit of return, that's yours too. Another way you can do it is mark the animal. If I am a cattle rancher, I will put the Circle D Ranch brand on the back side of the cow. So when I send the cattle out to be able to go and wander and find different things, to be able to graze on the federal grasslands, not my yard, the federal government's land, I can demonstrate that that's my cow because it's got my brand on it. The laws recognize that you can brand the animal and it's yours. Okay? As I said, there's a lot to talk about wild animals. Why? Because the law loves them because nobody owned them before. Okay? Now, a cow is generally not considered a wild animal. They're a domesticated animal. So your puppy, which presumably is not a wolf, it's, you know, a Boston Terrier, or a Golden Retriever, or a Chocolate Lab, those are domesticated animals. So the mere fact it wanders into somebody else's yard doesn't make it theirs. Okay? Only wild animals are deemed to have escaped your possession. Okay? Okay. Now, what's another way? Possession is the first way you can say I can exercise my property rights. What's the second way? If you are the titled owner, you are the legitimate owner of something, you can sell it to me. And I can have a certificate, some kind of evidence of the fact you sold it. I can show that I gave you money and you turned around and you gave me the item. So sale is another way by which we can transfer title. This is the most customary way. It's the way that most property is demonstrated of title. Because you know what? Not a lot of us are capturing wild animals. Most things were owned by somebody else before we had it. You buy a house, somebody else owned it. You buy a car, somebody else made it. Generally, most people are not manufacturing the car in their garage, so as a result of that, they go to a car dealer and buy it. The transfer of sale is how they prove their ownership. Adverse possession is all about a statute of limitations. We say that you can only bring an action either in criminal or civil court for wrongful conduct after the event happens for a period of years. Most statute of limitations are rather short. If I hit you in the face,
That's an intentional tort, so you don't have to do it, okay? You can sue me within a year. If I accidentally fall into you and break something on you, you can sue me for what is called negligence. You've got to bring that action within 2 years. If we have a breach of contract or I commit fraud, you have to bring that action within 6 years. These are called statute of limitations. And crimes also have statute of limitations. Most statute of limitations on most non-serious crimes, 7 years. Okay? So if you do something and you don't get caught for 7 years, they don't prosecute. Why is that? Why do you think we have that? Is that fair? Well, the problem with that is if you do not bring an action quickly, either in a criminal context or in a civil context, time changes and creates problems for proof. Witnesses die. They forget. Nobody understands what happened. The item itself may have been lost. So we have a concept known as statute of limitations. What this area does, the third area, is you take something and you keep it beyond the statute of limitations to get it back. That's what adverse possession essentially is. So if I turn around and steal your computer and take it, now that's stealing. But if I keep it for a period of time which is longer than the statute of limitation for the tort of conversion, which is stealing, or the crime of larceny, taking it, or robbery, if I take it from the forceful, then it becomes mine. If it's longer than the statute of limitations, why you cannot prove that I took it in a court of law? Because you have to bring that action within the statute of limitations.
That almost never happens, but it is a way you can get property. Okay. A cession is when you take property and then add labor to make it a new material. So if I turn around and take that clay out of the soil and make it into a brick by baking it, it's no longer the soil, it's now the brick. That's something new. That if I can prove that I created it by means of a process or some manipulation of the original product, then it becomes a new title. Now, what happens if I turn around and you and I are adjoining property owners and I bring my backhoe and I'm digging up the clay pit so I can make my bricks, but I accidentally dig into your yard. So I take your clay to make my bricks. What happens? Well, if I did it accidentally, I still took your clay. So I have to pay you for the value of the clay. Okay? I trespassed on your land and didn't lose that. I didn't know where the property line was well enough, but I still took your clay. You have a property right in that clay. This is your real property. What happens? What does the law do when it's an accident? When it's an accident, they make me pay you for the clay. If, however, I do it on purpose, I say, I'm going to go into this yard because I'm out of clay and mine, and I trespass and I take your clay away, then I make it into bricks, which are much more valuable to the, than the clay. Why? Because I've added value to it. I turn it into bricks. I got to pay you for the value of the bricks. Okay? So it's whether it's intentional or whether it is accidental. That's what the value is of it. Okay? Confusion. Confusion is you and I are farmers next to each other.
I have the best wheat in 5 counties. It's marvelous wheat. I've engineered it to be the best wheat. Pure wheat, not so good. Sorry, but that's the case. Okay? Anybody ever see the Wizard of Oz? Anybody? You see it. Raise your hand. What happens to the Wizard of Oz? Big tornado, right? Big tornado, right? Comes to Wicked Witch. Like a broken tornado. Big tornado comes around, Twister, and throws up my big pile of wheat, and throws up your big pile of wheat, and guess what? Your wheat goes in my wheat. Everybody agrees, Bob's wheats are better than yours, but guess what? Now there's 2 miles of wheat, and they're all mixed up. What happens with that? You're not going to go through and say, well, that's Bob's wheat, that's your wheat, Bob's wheat, they burn, right? What they do is say, sorry, pal, that's what happens. Unless you can show the known contribution, it goes down the middle. Okay? All right. Title by judgment. This is where the judge determines that you have your property rights. This is the case where my cow goes into your yard. Whose cow is it? You say, I possess it. Bob says, it's my cow. I want my cow back. Now, if I sue you in a writ called replevin, and these are going to be on the test too, if I sue you in replevin, that means give me back the cow. It's an equitable remedy. Okay? I want the cow back. Replevin is equity. I want the cow back. You took my cow, please return it. If, however, I say, you took my cow, and now the cow loves you much more than me, I don't want that nasty cow anymore, even though you took it. I want you just to pay me for the value of the cow. So I'm going to sue you for $2,000, which is Betsy's value. If I do that, that's an action in trespass. Trespass is a legal remedy, meaning it's in law. Law is money damages. Okay? I want my money. Replevin is the equity. Give me back my cow. Trespass is give me the value of the cow, give me money. Now, what happens when the two come together? That's called trover. Not Rover the dog, but with a P in front. Trover. Trover says, not only do I want you to give me that cow back, but you've been milking my cow and making money off my cow. I want you to give me money for the milk too. It's a mix between the legal and the equitable remedy. Trover is both of them. Those are the three writs. You'll see this again. Replevin, trespass, trover. Okay? Okay. Lost, mislaid, and abandoned property. What are these? Lost is very easy. Lost is that, and there used to be a distinction in the law between lost and mislaid. We no longer have a difference. Okay? It's the same thing in law today. At common law, there was a difference. Lost property is property that the owner didn't know that they lost. It was gone. The example used to be a watch on the bathroom floor. Well, nobody leaves their watch on the bathroom floor. They didn't know that it was gone. All they know is it's gone now. They don't know where it happened.
Mislaid is where you put something down or forgot you did it. In law school, they teach you that that's the briefcase you left in the courtroom. Okay? Yes, you generally put a briefcase down in a courtroom. It's what you do when you get in the courtroom. But you forgot to collect it at the time your case was over. Okay? If you put the watch on the counter in the back room, not on the floor, but on the counter where people put stuff when they go to wash their hands, that is deemed as mislaid. There used to be different rules for lost and mislaid property. As I said, it's combined today. There's no difference. Okay? Law does not distinguish. Okay? Abandoned property, on the other hand, is a whole different kettle of fish. If you lose or mislay property, you have a right to get it back within a period of time. If somebody finds it, they have a duty to look for you. We'll get to that in a second. Abandoned property, on the other hand, you immediately can take it. What's the difference? Abandoned property is when the owner itself wants to give it up. I'll give you an example. Every year, my town that I live in has a bulk collection. You can put things you no longer want out at the curb. If you put something of value that you just don't want anymore, somebody can come up and pick it up and take it away. You have evidence that you don't want it anymore. That's abandoned property. One year, I had a gas grill that didn't work very well. Every time I'd light it, I'd lose my eyebrows. It was an adventure. Yes. I put it out on the curb for the whole collection. I came back in one day in horror to tell my wife, oh my God, somebody took that grill. Hope they don't burn their house down. One day my wife told me we had four relatively new bicycles. My wife wanted to clean out the garage. Nobody was riding them, so we put it out for the whole pickup. I don't think they hit the curb before they were collected. Somebody got four nice bikes. We showed that we did not want to keep them. That's abandoned property. If you take abandoned property, you don't have to wait 1 millisecond before it becomes yours, because the owner has said whoever takes it, it becomes theirs. It's essentially a undesignated gift. Okay? Okay. Now, if you don't know where... I got to go back for a second. If you don't know that you have abandoned your property, it was key to the state. That means it returns to the state for safekeeping. Matter of fact, if you have some free time, you can go on the Office of the State Controller's website. He has a whole bunch of property that people have forgotten about, or he deems perhaps abandoned. If you do not claim that property, Aunt Tilda's bank account from 1952 that you forgot, then the state gets it and keeps it. That's just cheating to the state. It's kind of the default. Nobody claims it, goes back to the state. Okay?
Okay. What are the rules for the finder of lost property? Okay? They depend on its value. Under New York State law, if property is less than $20, then you have to make a reasonable attempt to find the owner, and if you're unable to find the owner, it's yours.
Under $20,
make a reasonable attempt to find the owner, can't find who that person is, don't know who that person is, it's yours. By the way, cash money, unless you see where it comes from, and that's a big unless, you see the $20 bill on somebody's pocket, that's a different story. But if you don't know where it came from, and it's a $50 bill, even though that's above the $20 threshold, cash money found is deemed abandoned. So it's deemed to be yours. So you see a $100 bill on the floor, guess what? Pick it up, because it's deemed to be yours. First come, first serve.
If it is a $100 watch, on the other hand, okay, then you have to report it as stolen, okay? And if you do not find the owner, it ends up getting reported and going to the police. What is the holding period? If it is less than $100, it's 3 months, then it becomes yours. They don't find the owner. 6 months, 100 to 500. 1 year, 500 to 5,000. And 3 years if it's 5,000 or more. Okay?
Those are found items. You have to turn it into the police. If the police will hold it with under your name, if they don't find the owner within that period of time, title vests in you. Okay? So it's not quite finders keepers. Finders keepers only applies when? If it's under $20. If it's over $20, then you gotta report it and hold. Okay?
What happens when there's multiple finders? They have equal rights in the property. Okay? Okay. Why don't we come down, everybody get a case?
Okay. I'm going to need some volunteers quick. Get out of here. Come on. You do? Okay. You've always been on the field for you. Come on. This is the most important case of property. It's the first case you will learn in law school. If you take a property class, it's an interesting thing. I need one more guy. Come on down a little. This is Ludwig. Ludwig Post. He lives in the country. You know where he lives? Name called Queens. He's got a farm. Queens isn't much of a farm today, but it was there. This is Ludwig's dad. He's a real American hero and a pilot. You're pretty cool. You're like a rock star. We didn't have a navy at the time of the Revolution. The British had the best navy in the world. We had a kind of peak. So we got guys like you. He's a pirate. We say, how would you like to go attack British ships and you get the key? You want to get the cash. Sounds pretty cool. They have a lot of money on these ships. Right? Sound good? Congress gave you what are called letters of marque. Matter of fact, this process was so important hiring pirates that has actually been put in the Constitution. Congress today can still issue letters of marque. became a hero. Why? We captured a whole bunch of British ships. And you got to capture them. And as a result of that, you got to keep what you captured, which diminished the British. And you became a multi-millionaire out of that. And you bought a whole fleet of ships. And like every good father, you want your son to have a better life than you, because you had a tough life. So you said, son, I want you to have a better life than me. I'm going to buy a big farm in Queens on the ocean where you can look out and see your ships. Because now you've transformed all those ships that were pirate ships into whaling ships. You're now a whaler, making even more money. Okay? Chasing big flippers. This guy is kind of like the Playboy son. He should live it off your money. He loves to have parties at the big house in Queens. You can go sit down and tell your son, try not to get into too much drunk. Okay? Now, one of the things you love to do with all your other wealthy friends, you didn't like to say, oh, you didn't like to get your hands dirty. So you said, friends, we wish to have a box fight. That's one of the things you did for fun. Okay? So you had fox hunts every weekend where you would take a captured pup, a fox, set it loose to run, and you chase after it with a bunch of horses. See? That's the fox. You have a bunch of dogs chasing the fox. I don't quite see the allure, but you love it. Okay? You can go stand over there for a while, you're talking amongst your friends. This is Jesse Pearson. This is Jesse Pearson's father. Again, this is another father and son theme. They're not wealthy, but they're very, very respected. Why? You're the local preacher. Okay? Back then, ordained, not ordained, wasn't too important, you ran the local church. Okay? Preach the word of God. So everybody kind of respected you. Some people actually even liked you. Okay? You became the son, figured you also had a small farm right next to his. He had a big ass farm, you had a small little farm, and you were learning to preach. You go sit down, your son's following in your footsteps, you are the preacher. This is Mrs. Pearson. Mrs. Pearson loves her husband, but she looks next door all the time and sees all the wild and fun parties that are going on all the time and says, you know, I wish I could have a life like that. You never buy me good things. You said, honey, you're my queen. I will get you good things over time. You guys can go over and stay there. Okay, Ludwig, come forward. Ludwig decides one afternoon he's going to have a fox hunt. He takes the fox. There you go, see? That's it. And you release them. What happens when you release foxes? They run! Particularly since they got all the dogs and the horses, and you the guns chasing them. Now, you don't want to kill your fox, because then you can't use it again. Right? You want to get them back in a cage. Well, the fox makes a beeline for the beach, which is a public beach. Nobody owns the beach. Okay? It's owned by the state of New York. 1800. provide to the eventual case. You see this fox running towards your property on the beach. What do foxes like to eat? Chickens! What do you raise on your farm? Chickens. Did you guys happen to see as a side note that in this latest flood in North Carolina, 3 million chickens died? That's a lot of chickens. You don't like foxes. They eat chickens. So what do? You take out your gun and you shoot it. What do you think of that? My fox! Why did you kill my fox? He takes it home and he loves it. So he makes a hat for you. A fox hat. For his wife. Now, this is America. This man took your fox. What do? You sued him. You say, I want my fox back. He says, I turned it into a hat for my wife. He says, I don't care. I want it back. Even if it's dead, I don't care. I want it back. So he sues. A suit is brought in state court before you. Jack is the judge. Jack takes a look. He's a local guy. Who's the wealthiest landowner in the county? Yeah. Who's got most of the power in the county? You like being a judge. Who do you side with? Mr. Post, Ludwig. Okay. Ludwig wins at the angry decision. Ludwig wins at the local, state court. The reason why he says you win is because you never relinquish control of the fox. Now, when you lose a case, what do you do in our country? You appeal, right? Okay. That's the most damage because you're in the citizens. This is Henry Livingston. This is Daniel Tompkins. They become so famous, both of you now have counties in Tompkins and Livingston. You become so much, so famous, you go on to the United States Supreme Court. That's what a brilliant person is. You go on to become governor of New York State and then vice president of the United States. Why do you think this case is so prominent? Two judges who make the decision are big dudes, okay? You disagree over what should happen. You take a vote of your colleagues, because that's what happens. Remember those 5-4 decisions? They vote on a panel. This is the appellate court. Before we have a court of appeals, that's why if you look at it, although it says Supreme Court, it's actually appellate. This is 1805 before things really get rolling. What's the highest court in the state of New York today? The Court of Appeals. That's their version back then. Okay? You, Judge Livingston, write the dissent. You say that the decision of Jack should be upheld. Then yes, he was chasing the fox. He never lost control of the fox. The fox should go to him. You have a different perspective. Now, what was this suit brought in? It's called trespass on the peace. What happened? He shot that fox. He's claiming he trespassed on his property, his personal property, the fox. What happened? What did you decide? William. Right? You decide that it was not Ludwig's fox, that the fox escaped. You write the most famous property decision in American history, saying mere pursuit, the fact you are chased after the fox, is not possession. What is possession? 9/10 of the law. Mere pursuit is not possession. So as a result, you award the fox, you get to keep the hat, you're very happy, you award the fox to Mr. Pearson. Now, if that fox had not run onto the beach, he would have gotten to keep his fox, because he would have said, it's still my land. But since it ran onto the beach, and you're the one that actually captured it by means of a bullet, carried it away, it's your fox. Judge, you write the most famous property decision in states. Go on, become governor and vice president just on this day. See you next week. Mere pursuit is not possession. Come see me if you didn't sign it.